Okay, here we go, folks. Incendiary Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. October 2nd, 2022, 10-2-2022. That's a 9. Pretty interesting. Everything happening. The Nord Stream. And I'll just call it an operation for now. you know, none of us really know what happened here. None of us really know what's going on. And, you know, we're just reading this stuff from various sources. It happened on 9/27. Well, it got, let's just say, leaked out to the world media 9/27/2022. 36 and a 6, a 42. Deep numerology there. Anybody that digs into this stuff, none of this is an accident. So the first thing I want to do is, and I covered this months ago. This was up on Unz.com, Mike Whitney, February 11th, 2022. And so it's called "The Crisis in Ukraine is Not About Ukraine, It's About Germany." And it has basically a map, and it has your Nord Stream 2, you know, where it runs from Russia into Lubmin, Germany. Okay, so Nord Stream 1, Nord Stream 2 runs very close to Nord Stream 1. And so this is from George Friedman, Stratfor CEO at the Chicago Council on Foreign Affairs. "The primordial interest of the United States, over which for centuries we have fought wars, the First, the Second, and Cold Wars, has been the relationship between Germany and Russia. Because united there, they're the only force that could threaten us. And to make sure that that doesn't happen." Pretty interesting, huh? "Ukrainian crisis has nothing to do with Ukraine. It's about Germany, and in particular a pipeline that connects Germany to Russia called Nord Stream 2. Now remember, this was written back in February, freaking 8 months ago. And we all this week, we got to see Nuland and Biden talking and threatening the Nord Stream 2 pipeline once operations began between Russia and Ukraine. And, you know, Biden making his little cryptic, "I'll promise you that we'll get rid of it," or whatever. So, you know, that was played on all the big broadcasts, Alex Jones and all the big alternative media people, you know, pushed this stuff out. Of course, nobody from the mainstream would play something like that, except maybe Tucker. And he's been covering this, and basically Tucker blamed the United States, you know, shadow government for doing this operation. Washington sees the pipeline as a threat to its primacy in Europe and has tried to sabotage the project at every turn. Even so, Nord Stream has pushed ahead and is now fully operational and ready to go. Once German regulators provide the final certification, the gas deliveries will begin. German homeowners and businesses will have a reliable source of clean and inexpensive energy, while Russia will see a significant boost to their gas revenues. It's a win-win situation for both parties. Excuse me. The U.S. foreign policy establishment is not happy about these developments. They don't want Germany to become more dependent on Russian gas, because commerce builds trust, and trust leads to the expansion of trade. And even Trump warned the Germans at the UN and so forth. And Kash Patel's been making his rounds. I was listening to him on, I think it was Nicholas Veniamin or whatever his name is. And, you know, talking about this relationship between Russia and Germany, and really kind of, let's just say, throwing the angle out there that Russia is a hostile nation and group of nations, the Federation to the West and so forth. Now let's roll back for a minute before I get back to the article. And remember back to the John Birch Society, of which I was a member mid-90s. You know, I was a member for a while, and I read all of their stuff, the New American Magazine. I got stacks of them at the house and so forth. And I still listen to Alex Newman and some of these guys, John McManus and William Norman Grigg, who's doing his own thing now. I can't remember a couple of the other authors, the big heavyweights, but you know, I was reading this stuff for years, and they really had the paradigm that Russia was still communist, still the head of the communist snake, and so forth and so on. And they were the ones behind a lot of state-sponsored terror and all this stuff. And so now we've seen this flip happen in alternative media circles to where now Russia's the good guy. I mean, you've got a ton of people out here that really lionize the Russians and say that they're the good guys in this thing. You know, the Nick Fuentes, this new little kind of youngster right. They love, you know, Putin and the Russians, and, you know, the trad youth people like Matt Heimbach and all them. They got very cozy with Alexander Dugin. And so it's very fascinating to watch the American kind of new right really fall in love with Vladimir Putin and the new Russia as nationalists, so-called populists and all that. Now, I played this guy, Russell Bentley, last week, he's still doing radio with Rents and other people, and he openly says he's a communist, and he loves, you know, being a Russian citizen and so forth and so on. And he's a Donetsk People's Republic citizen. And so there is some indications that there, let's just say, is still a strong communist kind of foundation there ideologically, you know, with Dugin and the National Bolsheviks, the Nazi Bulls, and all this weird stuff. And I said, you know what, let me look, and I'm looking at the Central Bank of Russia. And I start digging around, okay? And so, you know, it was established July 13th, 1990. Okay, so the predecessor of the bank can be traced back to the State Bank of the Russian Empire, founded in 1860. Bank is headquartered in Moscow. Its functions are described in the Constitution of Russia, Article 75. Now, I'm reading off of Wikipedia, but I've been digging around in other places, and this is pretty much what you can find out here in the West, okay? So the decision to create a state bank of the Russian Empire was made by Emperor Peter in the 1760s, okay? Emperor Peter III. So 1760s, let's look at 1776 here, and then the beginning already of battles to establish a state bank here in the United States, and then Andrew Jackson, I killed the bank, this whole thing. It was modeled on the Bank of England and would have the right to issue banknotes. However, due to the coup on 28 June 1762 and the murder of the Tsar, the project was not implemented. The outbreak in 1768 of the Russian-Turkish War and deficit of the state budget forced Catherine II, in turn, referred to the idea of issuing a paper money. And so she formed a state assignation bank, okay, which existed until 1818. It replaced by a state commercial bank. First central banking body in Russia was established 12 June of 1860 as the state bank, Gosbank of the Russian Empire. Okay, so then in early 1917, the bank had 11 branches, 133 permanent and 5 temporary, blah, blah, blah. So on 7th November 1917, the Russian State Bank was disestablished and replaced by the People's Bank. Okay, it's something what AOC would probably like to have here, the People's Bank, until the establishment of the Soviet Gosbank. Okay. So the Central Bank of the Russian Federation, established 13th of July 1990, this was during, really right before Slick Willie, 88, Reagan was out, 88 to 92, Bush was in. So Daddy Bush, Poppy Bush, was in during this establishment in 1990 of the Russian Republic Bank of the State Bank of the USSR. Okay, it was accountable to the Supreme Soviet of the RSFSR, later the Supreme Soviet of the Russian Federation. Okay, so and it has become a legal entity. So the roles and duties. Now listen to this. According to the Constitution, it is an independent entity. Remember Alan Gold's, Alan Greenspan talking about how the Federal Reserve is entity. So it's an independent entity with the primary responsibility of protecting the stability of the national currency, the ruble. Oh, that's what they say about us with the Federal Reserve note too. Before September 1st, 2013, it was the main regulator of the Russian banking industry, responsible for banking licenses, rules of banking operations, and accounting standards, serving as a lender of last resort for credit organizations. After appointed date, functions and powers of the CBR were significantly expanded, and the central bank received the status of a mega regulator of all financial markets of Russia. Interesting, huh? It holds the exclusive right to issue ruble banknotes and coins through the Moscow and St. Petersburg mints, the Gosnak Mint. Okay? Let's see. Under Russian law, half of the bank's profit must be channeled into the government's federal budget. Central Bank of Russia is a member of the Bank of International Settlements. Oh, the central bank of all central banks. So, half of the bank's profit must be channeled into the government's federal budget. Where's the resco? I'm just asking. The Bank of Russia owns a 57.58% stake in Sberbank, the country's leading commercial bank. The Bank of Russia owns as well 100% stake in the Russian National Reinsurance Company, biggest national reinsurance company. Okay, it was established in July 2016 for prevention possible problems with abroad reinsurance of large risks under international sanctions during the Ukrainian crisis, blah, 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 blah. And so that I'm looking at these history of these chairmen, and who we have now is a woman, first woman, right? And her name is Elvira Nabiulina, okay? Now, she is born in Ufa, Bashkir, okay? Now, Bashkir, ASSR, Bashkir Autonomous Soviet Socialist Republic, or simply Bashkira, was an is currently is known as the Republic of Bashkortostan. Okay? And she is a Tatar. The Volga Tatars, or simply referred to as Tatars, are a Turkic ethnic group native to the Volga Ural region of Russia. They are subdivided into various subgroups. Volga Tatars are Russia's second largest ethnicity after Russians. They compose 53% of the population of Tatarstan and so forth and so on. It's kind of interesting. Turkic. Where else have we heard of the Turkic bloodline in the Russia and Ukraine and so forth? Oh, yes, the Ashkenazis. The Khazars, the Tatars, now we've got Khazars. It's just interesting. You can read about Nabiulina's brooch. There was a belief in the Russian media that the head of the central bank uses brooches at public events to signal the state of the economy and the regulator's plans. Kind of like how Madeleine Albright and all these weirdos had these crazy brooches, right? Nabiulina appeared at a press conference with a brooch of a blue wave, a dot, a tumbler, a stork. In March 2021, when the increase in the refinancing rate was announced for the first time in 3 years, she appeared with a hawk. So they do this, they do these little kind of symbology with these brooches. Kind of interesting. We've seen the Dame Rothschild wearing the serpent brooches and all this weird stuff. Kind of interesting. So the Russians have a central bank that's part of the BIS system. Remember the words of Madame Rothschild: "No one on this earth goes to war unless my sons say so." And a lot of people look at some of the symbology on the Russian flag, the double-headed eagle, and so forth and so on. And, you know, it's just, I would like Putin to be a real dude and a renegade, kind of a maverick player on the world stage, but I just don't think this is the case. I think he is a player that is part of the, unfortunately, the BIS system, and how much sway they have over that central bank versus, let's say, the Federal Reserve or the Bank of England or so forth and so on. I am not privy to that information, but I figured, you know, I'm looking at this, all this stuff with the Nord Stream 2 and this buildup and so forth, and I'm really just kind of looking at it with a jaundiced eye due to the fact that something's telling me that this is just another Shakespearean drama playing out in front of our eyes. And what's really unfortunate now is the expendability of all of these fellow creatures of ours here on the earth, both human and animal, and the suffering that looks like it's about to really, really unfold, the depopulation. And I'm going to try to get into some of this stuff, but I figured I would get kind of with that real quick. And I'm going to get back to this article now, the Ukrainian crisis having nothing to do with Ukraine. And I'm not going to say nothing to do with Ukraine. I mean, when you look at the 40-some-odd bioweapons labs, the organ trafficking, and the things going on there in Ukraine, the amount of corruption, those servers, the CrowdStrike servers maybe, and you know, running parts of this stuff through there with the rigged election and so forth. I mean, it's just, there is stuff there, but I really, you know, these characters, he's, you know, trying to sign this these documents to join NATO, pushing NATO all the way to the Russians' borders, and just breaking all of our agreements as usual. You know, one administration to the other, one administration makes deals, the next one says, "Oh, hell with that, I'm not living up." You know, so we have this really, let's just say, no continuity. They talk about continuity of government, COG operations, all the time here, but no COG when it comes to dealing with other countries in the world. Really kind of, you know, it makes us a laughing stock. You know, one administration makes these deals and the next says, "Oh no, we're not doing that." And so, really crazy. In a world where Germany and Russia are friends and trading partners, there is no need for U.S. military bases, no need for expensive U.S.-made weapons and missile systems, and no need for NATO. There's also no need to transact energy deals in U.S. dollars or to stockpile U.S. treasuries to balance accounts. Transactions between business partners can be conducted in their own currencies, which is bound to precipitate a sharp decline in the value of the dollar and a dramatic shift in economic power. This is why the Biden administration opposes Nord Stream. Well, you know, if you jerks wouldn't have spent us into oblivion and let these Jewish mobsters run roughshod over our country and devalue everything and run up all these debts to these goons and just piss away money on the most stupid things, we wouldn't have to worry about acting like freaking gangsters to keep everybody on our plantation, which we can't even manage correctly. That's what's so, infuriating. These people that run our government, the rest of the world's looking at us. It's like you run false flag operations, shootings and bombings and terror attacks on your own people, keep them in a constant state of fear, and then you treat them like freaking dogs, all of us, and then you want to sit here and preach to the rest of the world like, hey, you need to stay on our plantation. And then people are getting sick of it. And then, you know, I'm going to play a little bit of Putin's speech when these four regions were joining Russia and so forth. And just to the fact that it's, you know, nobody on our televisions or anything will play anything, you know, once you're demonized as you know, the new bad guy, then guess what? You can do all the press conferences you want over there, and then nobody will cover a word the guy says unless it's alternative media. And then we're all, for doing so, we're giving aid and blah, blah, blah to the enemy, see? I mean, but it's just, it's such a paper tiger now. It's such a buffoonish supposition for all of us to be rah 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 patriotic now, and knowing the husk that Washington DC is, this cesspool of just depravity, licentiousness, it's lasciviousness, zero honor. You got all these generals walking around with these fruit salads on their chest, and they're just like some of the biggest traitors that have ever been born. And then you're going to sit there, the Q crowd is going to sit there and talk about, well, this is one big sting operation, and everybody's getting entrapped, and you know, all these guys are going to flip, and then we're going to do military tribunals on the whole government. You know, and look, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to pull this as a psyop, as part of the Shakespearean novel. And then we'll do some little coup, and then we'll really solidify our turd world status when we got freaking Mark Milley or one of these goons that steps in and saves the day. I mean, it's just, come on, man. It's getting old. It's stale. The FBI raiding people all over the place. I mean, I'm listening to a guy that got raided by the FBI, and he's a cop for 14 years and all this. And they raided him over some weapons crap, you know, over because he was tweeting, and it made the FBI mad. I mean, are we going to devolve into this pathetic of a regime? You know, Merrick Garland is the new Bella Coon, or the new Genrikh Yagoda. I mean, is this where we're going to go? Is this where we're going to let it just devolve into? So it's not just a pipeline, it's a window into the future, a future which Europe and Asia are drawn closer together into a massive free trade zone that increases their mutual power and prosperity while leaving the U.S. on the outside looking in. Warmer relations between Germany and Russia signal an end to the unipolar world where the U.S. has overseen for the last 75 years. A German-Russo alliance threatens to hasten the decline of the superpower that is presently inching closer to the abyss. That's why Washington is determined to do everything it can to sabotage Nord Stream and keep Germany within its orbit. It's a matter of survival. This is where Ukraine comes into the picture. Ukraine is Washington's weapon of choice for torpedoing Nord Stream and putting a wedge between Germany and Russia. The strategy is taken from page one of the U.S. Foreign Policy Handbook under the rubric Divide and Rule. Washington needs to create the perception that Russia poses a security threat to Europe. That's the goal. They need to show that Putin is a bloodthirsty aggressor with a hair-trigger temper who cannot be trusted. To that end, the media has been given the assignment of reiterating over and over again, Russia is planning to invade Ukraine. What's left unsaid is that Russia has not invaded any country since the dissolution. Now, remember, this was written in February. Dissolution of the Soviet Union, that the U.S. has invaded or toppled regimes in more than 50 countries in the same period of time, and that the U.S. maintains over 800 military bases in countries around the world. So look, so Russia did go into Ukraine for its quote-unquote special military operation. So it's either one of two things. Russia felt pushed to the wall and they had to act. I mean, look what happened with Russia and Syria. Russia felt, let's just say, due to the aggressions of this bloc over here, the Zio-Bolshevik bloc of the West, that they had to act to save President Assad's regime. And, you know, I look at pictures of Syria before this place, you know, before this gang did what it did to it. Pretty beautiful country. And Libya had a lot of positives going on, too. And look what they did with Gaddafi. And then all of a sudden, the what was a semi-trickle turned into just the spigot wide open with the invasion of Europe. And so it's a bad deal, very bad deal. But this was written back in February, and a lot of it really came to pass. All right. Who profits from pipeline terror? This is Pepe Escobar. Secret talks between Russia and Germany to resolve their Nord Stream 1 and 2 issues had to be averted at any cost. The war of economic corridors has entered incandescent, uncharted territory, pipeline terror, a sophisticated military operation that required exhaustive planning, possibly involving several actors, blew up four separate sections of the Nord Stream and Nord Stream 2 gas pipelines this week in the shallow waters of the Danish Straits in the Baltic Sea near the island of Bornholm. All right, there's the break. We'll see you guys on the other side. We'll play a little bit of Putin's speech just for posterity.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. blackoutcoffee.com.
Hello, I'm Peter Serafine, and I'm the new host of National Intel Report on Thursdays here on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm a gun-owning constitutionalist who believes that the only role of government is to protect my rights. I believe the First Amendment makes us free, and the Second Amendment keeps us free. If those ideas sound good to you, then join me in the National Intel Report, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Republic Broadcasting Network.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This apia, living in the grips of fear. Murder, rape, suicide, it happens all the time. American nightmare coming true. American nightmare coming straight for you. A sad state of affairs when there's nothing we can do. Sit and watch our country die. It affects, it injects, to correct we reject. The beginning of the end of time.
All right, we're back. Incendiary Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'll open the phone lines in a little bit, folks. Maybe. We'll see. I got a lot to get to. So let's see here. I'm back over here on this article. Diplomatic sources confirm that Berlin and Moscow were involved in secret negotiation to solve both the NS and NS2 issues. So they had to be stopped. No holds barred. Geopolitically, the entity that had the motive to halt the deal holds an anathema, a possible alliance between on the horizon between Germany, Russia, and China. The possibility of an impartial investigation of such a monumental act of sabotage coordinated by NATO, no less, is negligible. Fragments of the explosive slash underwater drones used for the operation will certainly be found, but the evidence may be tampered with. Atlanticist fingers are already blaming Russia. That leaves us with plausible working hypotheses. This hypothesis is eminently sound and looks to be based on information from Russian intelligence sources. Of course, Moscow already has a pretty good idea of what happened, but they won't make it public. The hypothesis focuses on the Polish Navy and Special Forces as the physical perpetrators. Quite plausible. The report offers very good internal details. American planning and technical support. Hell, you could have had SEAL teams involved with this. You just don't know. Underwater demolition experts. And aid by the Danish and Swedish militaries, inevitable, considering this is very close to their territorial waters, even if it took place in international waters. When I read the Danish thing, I was like, yeah, we just had a couple of these Danish guys shot in Indianapolis. They're here doing some sort of training a few weeks back, and then some of these guys end up getting shot out front of a hotel. The hypothesis perfectly ties in with a conversation with a top German intelligence source who told the Cradle that the BND was furious because they were not in the loop. Of course not. If the hypothesis is correct, this was a glaringly anti-German operation carrying the potential of metastasizing into an intra-NATO war. The much-quoted NATO Article 5 an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. Obviously, it does not say anything about a NATO attack. Well, think about Gladio, all the fake bombings and so forth that went on in Italy and elsewhere. It's just, you know, NATO OTAN is a bunch of scumbags. After the pipeline punctures, NATO issued a meek statement believing what happened was sabotage and will respond to any deliberate attack on its critical infrastructure. Nord Stream and Nord Stream 2, incidentally, are not part of NATO's infrastructure. The whole operation had to be approved by Americans and deployed under their divide-and-rule trademark. Americans in this case means neocons and neo-libs running the government machinery in Washington behind the senile teleprompter reader. This is a declaration of war against Germany and against businesses and citizens of the EU, not against Kafkaesque Eurocrat machine in Brussels. Don't be mistaken. NATO runs Brussels, not the European Commission head and rabid Russophobe Ursula von der Leyen, who's just a lowly handmaiden for finance capitalism. It's no wonder Germans are absolutely mum. No one from the German government so far has said anything substantial. And I'm not going to get into the rest of it, but that's up on oons.com, Pepe Escobar, Who Profits from Pipeline Terror. Now, Mr. Producer, if you get clip 5 ready, this is Putin's speech, and this is on RT. And, of course, there's a translator there. And we're going to play a couple parts of it. And I'm going to play the first part. It's going to go for a few minutes, and then we'll talk about we'll let the second part play. All right, so go ahead and play that first part, Mr. Producer.
Friends and colleagues, today I would like to address our soldiers and officers who are taking part in the special military operation, the fighters of Donbass and Novorossiya, those who went to military recruitment offices after receiving a call-up paper under the executive order on partial mobilization, and those who did this voluntarily, answering the call of their hearts. I would like to address their parents, wives, and children, to tell them what our people are fighting for, what kind of enemy we are up against, and who is pushing the world into new wars and crises and deriving blood-stained benefits from this tragedy, who are part of our united people, have seen with their own eyes what the ruling class of the so-called West have prepared for humanity as a whole. They have dropped their masks and shown what they are really made of. When the Soviet Union collapsed, the West decided that the world and all of us would permanently accede to its dictates. In 1991, the West thought that Russia would never rise after such shocks and would fall to pieces on its own. This almost happened. We remember the horrible 1990s, hungry, cold, and hopeless. But Russia remained standing, came alive, grew stronger, and occupied its rightful place in the world. Meanwhile, the West continued and continues looking for another chance to strike a blow at us, to weaken and break up Russia, which they have always dreamed about, to divide our state and set our peoples against each other and condemn them to poverty and extinction. They cannot rest easy knowing that there is such a great country with this huge territory in the world, with its natural wealth, resources, and people who cannot and will not do someone else's bidding. The West is ready to cross every line to preserve the neocolonial system which allows it to live off the world, to plunder it, thanks to the domination of the dollar and technology, to collect an actual tribute from humanity, to extract its primary source of unearned prosperity, the rent paid to the hegemon. The preservation of this annuity is their main, real, and absolutely self-serving motivation. This is why total desovereignization is in their interest. This explains their aggression towards independent states, traditional values, and authentic cultures. Their attempts to undermine international and integration processes, new global currencies, and technological development centers they cannot control. It is critically important for them to force all countries to surrender their sovereignty to the United States. In certain countries, the ruling elites voluntarily agree to do this, voluntarily agree to become vassals. Others are bribed or intimidated. And if this does not work, they destroy entire states, leaving behind humanitarian disasters, devastation, ruins, millions of wrecked and mangled human lives, terrorist enclaves, social disaster zones, protectorates, colonies, and semi-colonies. They don't care. All they care about is their own benefit. I want to underscore again that their insatiability and determination to preserve their unfettered dominance are the real causes of the hybrid war that the collective West is waging against Russia. They do not want us to be free. They want us to be a colony. They do not want equal cooperation. They want to loot. They do not want to see us a free society, but a mass of soulless slaves. They see our thought and our philosophy as a direct threat. This is why they target our philosophers for assassination. Our culture and art present a danger to them, so they are trying to ban them. Our development and prosperity are also a threat to them because competition is growing. They do not want or need Russia, but we do. Have repeatedly shattered against the courage and resilience of our people. Russia will always be Russia. We will continue to defend our values and our motherland. The West is counting on impunity, on being able to get away with anything. As a matter of fact, this was actually the case until recently. Strategic security agreements have been trashed. Agreements reached at the highest political level have also been declared tall tales. Firm promises not to expand NATO to the east gave way to dirty deception as soon as our former leaders bought into them. Missile defense, intermediate range, and shorter range missile treaties have been unilaterally dismantled under far-fetched pretexts. And all we hear is the West is insisting on a rules-based order. Where did that come from anyway? Who has ever seen these rules? Who agreed or approved them? Listen, this is just a lot of nonsense, utter deceit, double standards, or even triple standards. They must think we're stupid. Russia is a great thousand-year-old power, a whole civilization, and it's not going to live by such makeshift false rules. It was the so-called West that trampled on the principle of the inviolability of borders, and now it is deciding, at its own discretion, who has the right of self-determination and who does not, who is unworthy of it. It is unclear what their decisions are based on or who gave them the right to decide in the first place. They just assumed it. This is why the choice of the people in Crimea, Sevastopol, Donetsk, Lugansk, Zaporozhye, and Kherson makes them so furiously angry. The West does not have any moral right to weigh in or even utter a word about freedom of democracy. It does not, and it never did. Western elites not only deny national sovereignty and international law, their hegemony has pronounced features of totalitarianism, despotism, and apartheid. They brazenly divide the world into their vassals, the so-called civilized countries, and all the rest, who according to designs of today's Western racists, should be added to the list of barbarians and savages. False labels like rogue country or authoritarian regime are already available and are used to stigmatize entire nations and states, which is nothing new. There is nothing new in this. Deep down, the Western elites have remained the same colonizers. They discriminate and divide peoples into the top tier and the rest.
We have
never agreed to and will never agree to such political nationalism and racism. What else, if not racism, is the Russophobia that is being spread around the world? What, if not racism, is the West's dogmatic conviction that its civilization and neoliberal culture is an indisputable model for the entire world to follow? You're either with us or against us. It even sounds strange. Western elites are even shifting repentance for their own historical crimes on everyone else, demanding that the citizens of their countries and other peoples confess to things they have nothing to do with at all, for example, the period of colonial conquests. It is worth reminding the West that it began its colonial policy back in the Middle Ages, followed by the worldwide slave trade, the genocide of Indian tribes in America, the plunder of India and Africa, the wars of England and France against China, as a result of which it was forced to open its ports to the opium trade. What they did was get entire nations hooked on drugs and purposefully exterminated entire ethnic groups for the sake of grabbing land and resources, hunting people like animals. This is contrary to human nature, truth, freedom, and justice. While we are proud that in the 20th century, our country led the anti-colonial movement, which opened up opportunities for many people around the world to make progress, reduce poverty and inequality, and defeat hunger and disease. To emphasize, one of the reasons for the centuries-old Russophobia, the Western elite's unconcealed animosity towards Russia, is precisely the fact that we did not allow them to rob us during the period of colonial conquests and force the Europeans to trade with us on mutually beneficial terms. This was achieved by creating a strong and centralized state in Russia, which grew and got stronger based on the great moral values of Orthodox Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and Buddhism, as well as Russian culture and the Russian word that were open to all. There were numerous plans to invade Russia. Such attempts were made during the times of troubles in the 17th century and in the period of ordeals after the 1917 revolution. All of them failed. The West managed to grab hold of Russia's wealth only in the late 20th century, when the state had been destroyed. They called us friends and partners, but they treated us like a colony, using various schemes to pump trillions of dollars out of the country. We remember, we have not forgotten anything. A few days ago, people in Donetsk and Lugansk, Kherson and Zaporozhye declared their support for restoring historical unity. Thank you. Western countries have been saying for centuries that they bring freedom and democracy to other nations. Nothing could be further from the truth. Instead of bringing democracy, they suppressed and exploited, and instead of giving freedom, they enslaved and oppressed. The unipolar world is inherently anti-democratic and unfree. It is false and hypocritical through and through. The United States is the only country in the world that has used nuclear weapons twice, destroying the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan, and they created a precedent. Recall that during World War II, the United States and Britain reduced Dresden, Hamburg, Cologne, and many other German cities to rubble, without the least military necessity. It was done ostentatiously, and to repeat, without any military necessity. They had only one goal, as with the nuclear bombing of Japanese cities, to intimidate our country and the rest of the world. The United States left a deep scar in the memory of the people of Korea and Vietnam with their carpet bombings and use of napalm and chemical weapons. It actually continues to occupy Germany, Japan, the Republic of Korea, and other countries, which they cynically refer to as equals and allies. Look now, what kind of alliance is that? The whole world knows that the top officials in these countries are being spied on and their offices and homes are bugged.
All right, go ahead and pause.
It's a disgrace.
All right, so now I guess Sam couldn't hear me when I was telling him to pause it. But basically, and look, a lot of that is true stuff, but at the same time, when you listen to the whole speech, he lionizes the Red Army and so forth, and basically, he really kind of minimizes the exact same behaviors of the Soviet Union, okay, over, you know, its existence, okay, to where you're like, okay, Putin, I get it, you want to thrash on America and the West, I get that, but at the same, and look, killing the Tsar, implementing the Bolshevik Revolution, our elites are scumbags. But he'll go on here and he'll mention Anglo-Saxons, but he'll never mention Jews, who have been the secret power behind a lot of the malfeasance coming out of the West for centuries. The Sassoon family and the British East India Company and all this stuff. And, you know, the American pornography industry, let's just say, bring that up out of the abyss here. And so, you know, Judea declares war on Germany. And hey, I'm glad he brought up the bombing of Dresden and that sort of thing. So it's a real mixed bag here. Okay, go ahead and resume it for a couple more minutes.
If
European politicians obediently go along with it. They clearly understand that by pressuring the EU to completely give up Russian energy and other resources, the United States is practically pushing Europe towards deindustrialization in a bid to get its hands on the entire European market. These European elites understand everything. They do, but they prefer to serve the interests of others. This is no longer servility, but direct betrayal of their own peoples.
All right, God, go ahead and stop it there, Mr. Producer, and then forward it to that last part. Now, look, a lot of these so-called European elites are all about depopulation, Malthusian baloney. They are all about deindustrializing, committing suicide of their own countries. Why do you think the whole refugees welcome thing has been going on for all these years? The Kalergi-minded individuals, okay? And, of course, these Jewish mobsters behind a lot of it. And, of course, Pope Francis and all of his little Jesuit buddies are all involved in this, too. And so, you know, Putin, he paints the macro vision here, but he just says Western elites. He doesn't give you the names. He doesn't give you the factions. And he makes it seem like the United States is just one big evil block. Well, yeah, the government, but the people who are under severe occupation right now by a hostile, rogue entity in the District of Criminals, you know, it's just nuts that you know, this is the part, you know. So let's go to the really good part of the speech, where this one made a lot of headlines throughout the week about messing with kids and the three genders and all that. So play that second part, Mr. Producer.
We moved on to the radical denial of moral, religious, and family values. Let's answer some very simple questions for ourselves. Now I would like to return to what I said and want to address all citizens of the country, not just the colleagues that are here in the hall, but all citizens of Russia. Do we want to have here in our country, in Russia, parent number one, parent number two, and parent number three? They have completely lost it, instead of mother and father. Do we want our schools to impose on our children, from their earliest days in school, perversions that lead to degradation and extinction? Do we want to drum in their heads that certain other genders exist along with women and men, and to offer them gender reassignment surgery? Is that what we want for our country and our children? This is unacceptable to us. We have a different future of our own. The world has entered a period of fundamental revolutionary transformation. New centers of power are emerging. They represent the majority of the international community. They are ready not only to declare their interests, but also to protect them. They see in multipolarity an opportunity to strengthen their sovereignty, which means gaining genuine freedom, historical prospects, and the right to their own independent, creative, and distinctive forms of development in a harmonious process. As I've already said, we have many like-minded people in Europe and the United States, and we feel and see their support. An essentially emancipatory, anti-colonial movement against unipolar hegemony is taking shape in the most diverse countries and societies. Its power will only grow with time. It is this force that will determine our future geopolitical reality. Dear friends, today we are fighting so that it would never occur to anyone that Russia, our people, our language, or our culture can be erased from history. Today, we need a consolidated society, and this consolidation can only be based on sovereignty, freedom, creation, and justice. Our values are humanity, mercy, and compassion. And I want to close with the words of a true patriot, Ivan Ilyin. If I consider Russia my motherland, that means I love as a Russian, contemplate and think, sing and speak as a Russian, that I believe in the spiritual strength of the Russian people. Its spirit is my spirit. Its destiny is my destiny. Its suffering is my grief. And its prosperity is my joy. Behind these words stand a glorious spiritual choice, which, for more than 1,000 years of Russian statehood, was followed by many generations of our ancestors. Today we are making this choice. The citizens of the Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics,
okay, you can,
and the
stop
residents
it
of the Zaporozhye.
Now, let's just piggyback on that, okay? Beyond, this is in Secret Powers Behind Revolution, Beyond the fact of being strangers, the Jews have been reproached with being parasites, producing nothing themselves but exploiting the work of others. It is unnecessary to return to this subject, which we have treated in later chapter, Jews and Economic Life. Let us pass, therefore, to the third complaint. The Jews are revolutionaries. Think about this trans baloney here. Think about everything, the uprooting of everything here. Okay? They have always been so, and the numerous examples of which we have quoted of their activities in socialism bring to the support of this assertion an alarming confirmation. Their revolutionary tendencies assume today two phases. On the one hand, they are rebels fighting against all authority, and on the other hand, they are revolutionaries in the present meaning of the word. That is to say, they are the best supporters of the principles of 1789 and socialism, to a great extent one of their creations. They were always malcontents. This is from Bernard Lazar. I do not mean to suggest by that they have been simply fault finders and systematic opponents of all government, but the state of things did not satisfy them. They were perpetually restless in the expectation of a better state, which they never found realized. Their ideal was not one of those which is satisfied with hope. They had not placed it high enough for that. They could not lull their ambition with dreams and visions. They believed in their right to demand immediate satisfactions instead of distant promises. From this has sprung the constant agitation of the Jews. And we will see you guys after the top of the hour break, and I'll read one more paragraph and we'll move on. It's been on the way now, 94 miles. A lot of people are made for living their lives. The people are risen to realize their blood. To tear it down, to hold it anchored. Tear it down the wall, got to see gold.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.